All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Connecting to PAC. This is your host, Abdullah Najjar, and today I am joined by Juan Lopez Flores. Juan is a student here at NC State University studying business administration, and he is from Honduras, or Honduras. That's how it's pronounced in Spanish? Okay. Today we'll try to talk more about his journey here in the States. About life in the States, you know, studying at NC State University, and a few other topics that touch on, you know, culture, lifestyle, and the change in environment coming from, obviously, Honduras and transitioning to the States. This is something, it's, I'm sure, is a major transition, so we'll try to explore that together in today's conversation. So, without further ado, Juan, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So, I guess, you know, the obvious question is always, you know, how is it that someone, say, from a foreign country, or why is it someone from a foreign country decides to show up here to the States and pursue a college degree? So, I'm interested to know, your story and why you decided to transition from Honduras to the States. When did that start, and what sort of motivated you to show up to NC State University?
So I think my story is kind of, as an international student, is kind of different because of the fact that I'm a U.S. citizen. Okay. So I grew up in Honduras like my entire life, but I was born in the U.S.
Wow.
So yeah, my mom used to live here in the U.S. So when she had me, I was here for like maybe a year tops, and then we went back to Honduras. So I grew up as a Honduran. But the fact that I was born in the U.S. Really created this looming like idea that whenever I came of age, I would come to study to the U.S. just because of, you know, educational reasons. Like, of course, the education over here is a lot better than the education in Honduras. It would open a lot more doors when it comes to job opportunities. Even just the quality of life over here would be a lot better. So it was just, it was kind of an unspoken decision between my parents. And later, as I grew up, I became part of that discussion. But it was never like my original decision. Like, it wasn't something that I was like, I want to go to the U.S., but it was rather like my parents were always like, you're going to go to the U.S. and you're going to leave Honduras and you're going to go study over there.
Wow. So technically you have this sort of background, you know, being an American citizen, but living primarily outside of the United States. So you're kind of torn between two cultures in a sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you, you know, over the years, how did you sort of deal with that, knowing that, well, I'm American, but I don't maybe feel that level of attachment to the U.S., given that I've lived abroad for most of my life? Like, how do you think about that? How do you gauge the subject in a way?
Well, so the funny thing about that is whenever I was in Honduras, I always identify myself as an American, even though I knew virtually nothing about American culture. I was always like, no, I'm American, guys, trust. But wow. Now that I'm here in the U.S., I kind of identify myself more as Honduran. And I think that's just because of the things that we don't have, I guess, whenever whatever we don't have, we want that. So whenever I was in the U.S., in Honduras, I just kind of grew up trying to get everything from American culture that I could. Like, for example, I would watch TV in English, or I would consume YouTube videos in English, listen to English music. I completely rejected a lot of like the Hispanic music.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy because, well, I kind of knew that I was coming to the U.S. eventually, especially with my parents pushing it. So I figured that it was kind of pointless to engage with Honduras, which is something that completely changed. Like, now that I'm in the U.S., like, that's a completely different story. Like, now I want to connect a lot more to my Honduran background. But when I was growing up, it was something that I rejected a lot. Like, I didn't consider myself Honduran. I would think a lot about what it meant to be an American, especially since I wasn't an American like in the U.S., but rather in a different place, and especially since my parents were not American, because both of my parents are Honduran. So it was just such an interesting thing because a lot of the people that I grew up around would always be like, no, he's American. Yeah, he's not from here, guys. And I honestly, in the sense of the whole American identity, I wasn't really American because everything that surrounded me was Honduran.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just like me hanging on to this identity and I guess really trying really hard to... And this comes in with the conversation of what is the foreign perception of what America looks like.
That's
and
right.
Like what Americans are and how they act, what they're supposed to do, the way that they engage with other people in other cultures. So I was basically like playing an American in a different country. But
playing an American.
Yeah, but coming here to the US, I realized like I was really wrong.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, this truly reminds me of a, you know, conversation I had, you know, on the podcast with someone from Mexico, but he lived abroad most of his life.
Mm.
Like, you know, if you calculate the number of years that he spent abroad versus the number of years that he spent in Mexico, you would find that he most of his life wasn't even spent in Mexico. But you know, and I had to ask him that question, you know, during the conversation where I wanted to know how the level of attachment that he has to Mexico or his hometown. And for some reason, that connection was so strong. And he said, you know, I still identify as Mexican. I still consider myself Mexican. And that's like the culture that I feel very much attached to. But for some reason, you know, but, you know, obviously he lived abroad for many years and still he has that strong connection, you know. And I would be interested to know, like, how, you know, especially when it comes to your case, you know, you've lived in Honduras for most of your life, but now you're here in the States. Why do you think this connection sprung up to Honduras when you showed up here? Like, for some reason... Now you say I'm Honduran, or you know, I feel more attached to it, even though when you were there, you weren't. Like, at what point do you think that was triggered, that strong connection?
I think it was mostly based on the experiences, and I'm not going to call them struggles, but a lot of the circumstances that you're faced
mm-hmm.
with as a Honduran here in the US.
Yeah.
Because I feel like once I got here, I think about it as, well, I don't like to think about it. It basically comes down to me living off as basically a Honduran immigrant, despite the fact that I had a U.S. citizenship. So it's just really interesting the fact that a lot of my experiences were those of Honduran immigrants, despite the fact that I was a U.S. citizen. Like, I had all these, and of course, like, I got FAFSA, like, I got Medicaid, like, I got a lot of things that are inherent to only American citizens.
Right.
So I'm better off than a lot of them, but still, like, I still had to do a lot of the things that are usually more considered, you know, are more attached to the immigrant experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like coming here to the U.S. was just me realizing that, not that I was an American, but rather that my background and the way in which I grew up and even all the cultural things that I grew up doing, like, for example, in Honduras, physical touch is very encouraged. Like, people hug, people kiss each other on the cheek whenever they see one another. But over here, people don't do that. And
that's true.
And it's just there's always this southern warm here in the south. Like, I've been up north, it's even worse. But I feel like Americans just have this sort of coldness towards each other. Like, I feel like whenever people say hi, they don't hug each other, they'll just wave. And that's just something that I didn't grow up with, you know?
Yeah.
And that was just like realizing that all of these experiences I had when I was over there, of course, I saw them as like, I didn't think of them as anything special. Like, I didn't think of them as anything noteworthy. But coming to a different country, I realized, you know, those are the things that I'm used to. Those are the things that I grew up with. And those are the things that I appreciate. Those are the values that were created within me because of where I grew up, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that are valued here, not to say that I don't share those values, but at the same time, I do think that I do have a lot of, I do appreciate a lot of things that are connected to my Honduran background, if that makes sense, in
100%.
Comparison to the one in the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have I've experienced something slightly similar where I spent a few years in Lebanon, approximately 3 or 4 years, and in that culture, men, when they're greeting each other, they greet each other with a kiss on the cheek.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the lips don't touch, but
right.
You know, there's that element to it of physical connection.
Yeah.
You know, but when I transitioned, obviously here to the States, I realized that, man, it feels so strange to me now that I can't really, do that, right?
And especially going into the conversation of the kind of relationships men have with each other here in America,
mm-hmm.
I feel like they're such a, I'm not going to say toxic masculinity, but there's just such a big focus on independence. And just America in general has such a massive focus in independence, you know? And that's another thing that I appreciate back from Honduras. You know, there's such a group dynamic, you know, that I feel like I it's a lot harder to find here. You have to really work to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like I had fraternal relationships with some of my male friends back in Honduras that are kind of out of reach sometimes here just because of the cultural context.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah, like you said, like there's a lot of interactions that you're just not able to have because that's just not normal.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people consider that really out of the ordinary and they'll just be like, what are you doing?
Right. And the strange part is when you mention that to Americans, you're like, you know, that's how we do it back there, you know.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that's very
well, that's
strange.
Weird.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that is one of those things, you know, the cultural shocks that I think some of us do experience when we show up here. You know, I don't think if someone from, say, maybe Western Europe showed up here, maybe that particular element wouldn't be as shocking as it would for maybe, you know, us coming
from
countries where there is that sort of platonic intimacy, I would
call it. No, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah. So that is, you know, a shocker to most people. But I would love to, you know, here transition to maybe the education itself. I mean, do you, when you were in Honduras, what was maybe the language that you grew up being taught in schools? Like, was it English? Was it Spanish? Or is there, you know, a fusion or an integration of both in the curriculum that you guys were exposed to?
So in Honduras, for the most part, the public education system only teaches in Spanish. I was fortunate enough to be in the private education system. So I was in a private school. It was a private Christian school, and they taught me English my entire life. So that's why I have the level of English that I do. I have the pronunciation that I do. It's just because I grew up with that.
Yeah.
But no, for the most part, English is not part of the Honduran curriculum. Like, I know a lot of other countries do have that just because of how widely used English is, but Honduras really doesn't. A lot of times, there's not really language electives in the same way that there is over here. Like, electives are not really a thing, if I were to say. Yeah, no, like, in like middle school, high school, all of that, you don't really have electives. You just really do what the curriculum gives you, you know? So for example, on that same conversation, like I know like a lot of people get very good understanding of global, not politics, but history at least. And just a good overview, I guess, of what history looks like and like what it was in like World War One, World War Two. Mm-hmm. But Honduras, a lot of teachers are like people in college. You know how like you have McDonald's and you have like Starbucks, and then that's like they usually like part-time jobs that people have.
Yep.
In Honduras, that's teachers.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's oof.
So a lot of my teachers, because you're not allowed to teach, you're not allowed to have a job unless you're over 18, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people who are in college don't really go for service jobs. They end up going into teaching. So they'll like part-time teach, I don't know, Spanish or English or something like that. But it ends up creating this dynamic where the teachers are like insanely underqualified to teach whatever they're teaching. So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Wow. And you guys would have, I'm sure, a very weird relationship with the teachers because like they're within the same
age.
My
god,
right?
One of my best friends here in the U.S. because she also came here through a program because she was studying education.
Yeah.
The exchanges, it's just a exchange program from teachers from other countries to teach Spanish here in the U.S. She's one of my best friends, and she was my Spanish teacher in high school. So because we were so close in age, and I remember even the way that we interacted with like my entire grade, which, by the way, was another thing I had to get used to because my class was 17 people. Over here, people have so many, like 400 people. Like, you don't get to know everyone in your own class. Like, I knew everyone in my class. And we just had a really chill relationship with her because she was so close to our age, you know? Yeah.
Wow. That's also, I think, something that a lot of people here would be shocked to hear about.
Oh, yeah. You
know? That's a...
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But there were so many teachers like that over there. Yeah.
So how did you... So you were learning English in school, but when you go back home, you would speak Spanish, I presume.
Yeah, but with my sister, I would speak English.
How? Okay, so that's an interesting thing here. I mean, how do you, one question I would ask is, which language do you feel connected to the most, or which language do you think you can express yourself more comfortably in? Like, how do you, are they equal, or?
No, it depends on which settings. Because I feel like academically, I'm way more comfortable with English.
Yeah.
Because like I've stated before, like I feel my education has taken such a big upgrade since I came to the U.S.
Right.
That I feel like I've learned different concepts and different ideas that I didn't really tackle when I was in Honduras.
Mm-hmm.
So my vocabulary for English is a lot more, I feel like broader. It's a lot more complex. So I feel like I can defend myself in English a lot better than in Spanish. But in Spanish, I feel like I just have this attachment to it. It's just so much warmer. I'm so much funnier in Spanish. Like, it pisses me off.
So much funnier in Spanish. Yeah. Something I haven't really heard a lot.
No, I'm hilarious in Spanish. It pisses me off.
Oh, man, I wish I could speak Spanish so I can put you to the test.
Yeah.
Wow, so there's... So it's very much... You know, it depends on the situation, the context.
Yeah.
But now when you say you were to spend more, you know, the next couple of years you'd be spending here in the States,
mm-hmm.
Would you think you would still have, would you still think that level of attachment to Spanish, would you think that it would remain as strong, or, you know, it would be impacted by the number of years or the experiences that you have here in the States? I mean, what do you think about that?
That's the thing that I'm currently, like, that's why I'm so attached to my Honduran identity today, is because of the fact that once I came here to the U.S., I kind of started feeling it drift away. Like even my Spanish started getting a little rusty.
Oh.
So I feel like the reason why I'm hanging on to it so much now is because I don't want to lose it. So whether that be like the kind of experiences I've had, or the kind of customs I have, or the way that I like to eat my food, or, you know, like stuff like that, I just don't want to give that away. You know, I feel like it will take away such an important part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So Spanish is part of that. I feel like I can see that. I can obviously see the progression of me losing my Spanish the more time I spend in the U.S., but I want to constantly engage in speaking Spanish because of that. So, for example, I'm a business major, but I'm minoring in international studies because I want to go into international affairs. Yeah, international affairs.
Oh,
and I want to work with people who are either in Latin America or Latin America, because I want to keep that connection with my culture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to let that go away. And I feel like a lot of people do find that struggle. Like, I've heard so many of my aunt, who I lived with for a minute, she came from Honduras. She's in Charlotte. She doesn't know how to say some things in Spanish, and she grew up her entire life in Honduras, maybe even more longer than I did.
Wow.
And she forgot a lot of Spanish words she speaks. Like, her grammar is a lot worse than it was whenever she was in Honduras. Like, I have better grammar than she does.
That
because
is.
she just has to speak English. And the craziest thing is, when she came to the U.S., she knew nothing in English.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Why Charlotte? Why North Carolina? Why the South? I mean, why that particular region?
Yeah, I don't know. I've asked myself that so many times. And I think, to some extent, I'm grateful that it was, because I wouldn't know the people that I do. and I wouldn't have had the experiences I've had if it wasn't for the fact that I was in Charlotte and therefore I ended up in NC State. Mm-hmm. But the only reason why I'm in Charlotte and therefore NC State is because my aunt, who came to the U.S. before we did, she used to live in New York, but New York was really expensive. So when a lot of people started migrating from New York to the South, a lot of them came to North Carolina. So it was either Florida, North Carolina, Miami, all these places. And her husband at the time had some family in North Carolina. So they decided to settle down here. And when I came to the U.S. With my sister, like 3 years ago, we really didn't have anywhere to go. So we connected with my aunt and we were like, hey, can we go live with you? And that's like how we ended up in North Carolina.
Yeah. So there, you still maintain, there's a bond that you maintain with your maybe extended family as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm sure is not, I mean, here in the States, you wouldn't find a lot of Americans maintaining that connection to their extended family.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what about the South? Do you think it's different? Do you feel like you can connect more to people here than you could maybe in New York or maybe the East Coast?
Yeah.
Do you feel that there's a sense of community here that is very similar to how things were back in, you know, in Honduras or, you know, in culture that you were immersed in?
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree. And I think that's why a lot of Hispanics from New York and up north ended up gravitating towards the South.
Yeah.
It's not only because of the housing market and economic reasons, but I also think it resembles a lot more of our culture, you know, because the way that I grew up, I always thought of, oh, I'm a northerner at heart. I'm like cold. I'm like, no, yeah, I need to like, yeah, I do my things when I need to do. And everyone else is like unimportant. But no, I appreciate so much that community, you know, because mm-hmm. that's just what I grew up around. So I think the warmth of the South, the traditional idea that people have of what Southern families are and their connection to their extended family is really refreshing to see, because that's not the perception that I had of America, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just great to see that some of the values are transcultural. Like, they're not just from Honduras, but they're also regional here in the U.S. Like, you can find Americans who really value the same things that I do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you, now that you have, you're living abroad, and I think this is your first experience, right, abroad on your own.
That was my, coming to the U.S. was my first time getting out of Honduras, period.
Oh.
Yeah, that was my first time boarding a plane.
Whoa.
Well, I mean, aside from when I was a kid, but.
Right, and how old were you at that time?
I was 17.
That yeah. must have been scary.
No, I no? was so determined. Try I did no, I didn't want to be in Honduras at all. No, I was like, I'm so ready to come to the US. Yeah. I
wow.
took it headstrong. I was so focused on getting my education and just leaving everyone and everything I knew behind. I just wanted to reinvent myself with a different identity. And since I already felt like I was different from Honduras, mm-hmm. I was kind of separating myself already. I just saw it as like the perfect opportunity to move on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you did that with your sister, you said?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so that, was that a similar experience for her as well, since you both would be considered, you know, American, you have the nationality?
Yeah.
So she also feels less attached to Honduras?
No, then. She's the complete opposite.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She actually, we've had, like, completely different developments. Like, she's learned to become more of her own person despite her Honduran identity, kind of discovering herself here in America, like who she is in a different country, whereas I've had to like kind of connect back to my roots and realizing what part of, like, what about Honduras makes me, you know?
Right.
And it's just because whenever she left, she was devastated. She was a lot more distressed than I was whenever we came here, because the reason why she left was because job opportunities, college, there was just, the education she was going to get here was going to be exponentially better than whatever she could have gotten in Honduras. So it just made sense for her to come here. And at the time, she had a job that was, a lot of people end up going into call centers in Honduras. Like, that's kind of like, if you're not a teacher, you're in a call center.
Oh, wow.
But a lot of young people, mostly. And she didn't like it. She knew that she had the opportunity to get a better education because she was a U.S. citizen, so
right.
she figured she would take it, and she came, but it was a lot different. She approached it a lot more differently than I did, because I was very determined, and she was just, she knew that it was a good decision to take, but she was a lot more hesitant to take it. Yeah.
That's incredible. The fact that you both grew up in, you know, the same place, same house, and you have different ideas and perceptions of who you are, and that obviously materialized when you both had to make the decision of leaving. Mm-hmm. That's just incredible to me. That's, wow. What is it that you think appreciate the most about U.S. culture or the experience that you have right now here in the U.S.?
I think, ironically, it's the independence, the independent nature of it. I think in Honduras, I experienced one of the reasons why I didn't like I obviously miss the group dynamic, like the idea of collectivism, but I also, there's a small tolerance for outliers, I think. There's just, if you do not fit what is deemed as the socially acceptable, like if you have different ideas or if you don't agree politically, if you don't agree, even your fashion sense, like so many things go into what the idea of who you should be, you know. I think in the U.S. there's so much more freedom of thought in the sense of you can wear whatever you want and nobody cares, you know, and you can study whatever you want and nobody cares. Over there, it's like if you're not a doctor, a lawyer, or what was the other one? Let's just stay with doctor or lawyer.
Yeah, engineer maybe.
Yeah, engineer. You're not going to get money and you're kind of a disgrace to your family, you know. But over here, you can study whatever you want. And most people encourage that difference of thought. Even in the education system, I think, the way in which, for example, the interdisciplinary studies. No, what is it called? The freshman, the one here.
Oh, exploratory studies,
exploratory studies, yeah. That program was crazy for me. It encourages people to find something that they want to do. Like, it's not pushing them to a certain degree in particular, you know? And I don't think that that's an idea that a lot of Hondurans share. Like, there's a common saying in that a lot of family members would say to some of my cousins, and it would be like somewhere along the lines of, oh, we'll finally have a doctor in the family, you know, because they want, they just, there's such a big pressure because of the fact that a lot of the other careers are not as well remunerated as doctors, lawyers. There's the collectivist idea, you know, of family and how they stick together even after, you know, like there's a lot of kids who are 24 and they're still living with their parents. Even 30 and they're still living with their parents, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this big push for someone to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So your personal passion, idea, that's kind of pushed to the side and you're supposed to put your family first, if that makes sense. And I think that's not, like, I know, like, in the South is very prominent as well, but not in the same way. It's very different. The way in which I've seen it manifested here in the U.S. It's just not with the same, like, there's not that same level of obligation. Like, in Honduras, it just feels like this is your duty as, like, my kid, as my, like, as my son, as my grandson, as my sibling. Like, this is, like, your duty, and you can't escape it because we're bonded by blood. But over here, there's just such bigger freedom of what you can do, you know? And even if you don't end up doing what your family wants you to do, it's just, like, okay, you'd be a great doctor, but, you know, but, like, over there, it's just, like, you have to do it because you're, like, we depend on you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a lot more ominous, I guess.
Yeah, and they might even fear that you would be, like, some sort of disappointment to the family or, you know, the reputation of the family.
Oh, so yeah, that is, yeah, yeah.
That's quite big, even where I come from, the region there, world. Because, I seem to be quite the outlier in my family, and my brother too, you know, we pursued paths that weren't in the STEM world,
right?
You know, like, yeah. I'm doing political science, he's doing philosophy, but there is that expectation where you have to have at least one child in the family that's either a doctor or, you know, a lawyer or an engineer.
Yes, so because, that, like, kind of makes up for everyone else.
Right. You're going to carry the entire family on your shoulders.
No, that's such a common idea. And I think that's just collectivist cultures in general. They just kind of have, I don't know, I think, like, a lot of like I understand how the South in the U.S. is its own like culture, and like it's very characterized by some collectivist ideas, but it's not to the extent to which collectivist cultures in other countries are, because
not as extreme.
No, oh my God, you're dead to like my aunt, my grandma is one of the most she holds the strongest grudges I've ever seen in my entire life. Like there's like relatives that she would say like verbally, be like, you are dead to me, and they were dead to her. Like never spoken, never to be seen, never to be disgraced, never again. Like
that's
it's
hardcore.
it's just crazy, because you grew up with like, oh, so if I'm not gonna do what my family wants me to do, then you know, like what kind of value do I have? What kind of value do I bring to my family? What was all their sacrifice for, you know? And I think you can acknowledge the work that your parents did for and your family has done for you without having to let that dictate your future, I think. And that's just not an idea. And of course, not to generalize, not all Hondurans think like this, but at least my family, that's not an idea that was very present there. Like it was very, I did all of this for you, therefore you owe me at least being a doctor.
Yeah. No, I think I agree with so many of the things that you brought up, and I think for my family particularly, they were under that societal pressure of truly expecting one of their children to become to live up to that standard.
Yeah.
But slowly and gradually they realize that, you know, it's not our passion. We don't have maybe the mental strength or the capacity to maybe go into the STEM major and enjoy it or succeed at being, you know, a biologist or a doctor, you know, a mathematician. Like we don't really have that, you know, mental bandwidth or whatever. Like we're more into the arts, we're more into the humanities. And they started realizing it, and it was a tough pill to swallow, I'm sure, but then they just started to understand that there are times when you just can't really live your life trying to satisfy the society and what they expect you to do, or whatever standard they expect you to sort of fulfill. Or,
yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a learning process, I think, not just for us as people who want to explore where our passion lies, but even for our families or the society that we're in. It's a learning process. They have to understand that, hey, we should celebrate these differences. We shouldn't all be the same. We shouldn't all be, you know, diversity is sometimes needed.
Yeah.
And I think that is, our experience is kind of, you know, is a testament to that. You know,
yeah.
Like you really need to be who you are and be yourself, which is where the idea of, you know, the individual or the society that's oriented around the idea of the individual. I mean, there are many good things about that, which is something that I enjoy as well, being here in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, I get to explore, I get to do things where I probably would be maybe afraid or, you know, sort of constrained.
Or encouraged not to do them.
Yeah, back, in a different, in a different context. So that is something that I relate to. And it's something that I think a lot of people might have difficulty understanding, especially those that maybe have lived in the States their entire lives. Like, they wouldn't be able to get it, right?
Yeah, And I think partly my sister, that was like, because I didn't experience it as hardly as she did, because she was the firstborn. So she went through all of like both of my parents were pushing her to do different things. And she was like, she tried being a doctor, studying, going to college over there to be a doctor. She didn't like that. She tried being a lawyer. She didn't like that. She tried doing architecture. She tried so many things, and she had so much push from my parents. And the biggest thing is she still lived under the roof, and, you know, the housing market over there is also bad. So it's not like affordable for people, young people to have owned their own place. You know, that's why a lot of 30-year-olds end up still living with their parents, is because it's just not affordable. So she knew that was going to be her life for the next 10 years. If she stayed in Honduras, just different pressures from different people to do something that she didn't want to do. So that's why I think she was pushed to come to the U.S. Right. alongside, yeah.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure she made the right decision.
Oh, yeah, she's thriving. Yeah. She's got a great position.
That's awesome. Yeah, congratulations to her, and congratulations to you.
Yeah.
So I'd love to, you know, sort of wrap things up here and, you know, ask you a final question here. What would you maybe recommend, or based off of your experience so far here in the States, what would you say to someone Honduran who, or is that the way to pronounce it properly?
Yeah, Honduran. Yeah, yeah.
What would you say to that one person who wants to show up from Honduras, maybe at 17, here to the States, and pursue maybe education or a college degree?
Do your research, because I didn't.
Okay.
Oh my God! If you know what you want to do, and if it then look for places that offer a good education on that. But even if you don't know what to do, find experiences that will show you. Not, it doesn't matter if they'll like show you that you don't want to do that. That's good, because you just scratch something off, mm-hmm. and you can move on to the next thing that you think you might want to do. But just make sure that you know where you're going, because I feel, or at least that you have some idea of where you are going. Like, you don't need to have anything set in stone, but just have some, like, for me, it's mostly thinking back on the application process, and it's, oh my God, it's so convoluted to go here in college in the States, and I had no idea about that. I just thought you showed up and you were like, hey, I'm coming to college, and they'll be like, okay.
It's definitely not that
not
easy.
Like that, yeah. So know that the application process is really, it's a lot more, it's very thorough. There's a lot of aspects to it. And then know that another thing, I think it's like, obviously in other countries, there's such a big, like, since they're different countries, the only schools you really hear about are Ivies, really top schools, and mm-hmm. you don't need one of those to get a great education. I think I've gotten my best experience here at State than I would have in a different college. And I applied to so many colleges. I applied to 12.
Wow.
And
it's a big number.
Yeah, it's a lot. it's a lot of essays. But
right.
I think I've gotten, and I've been able to develop in the best way that I could have here at NC State than I would have in any other school. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just because State is the kind of school that I needed at that moment when I was applying, and that I need now. And the resources and the professors and the programs that we have here are just catered towards me. So knowing what you want, not even just career-wise, but as a person, what your needs are, and what making your research on what kind of institutions offer that, is going to go a long way to enhance your college experience. Because, yeah, I think a lot of people in Honduras especially are focused on, like, go to Harvard. But, okay, there's so many factors to go into Harvard, you right. know. There's, like, the amount of money you got to pay and so many other things, you know. And it might not even have the best programs for what you want to do. Like, there might be other institutions who might cater to your particular needs a lot more. So just know what you're doing. Don't throw yourself in mm-hmm. there just because I did that, and I'm fine, but it was a lot harder than it needed to be.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. definitely. Well, yeah, that's amen to that. I want to thank you for joining me, Juan, and for sharing with me your story. That's just an incredible sort of, you know, life that you've had, and I'm sure there's a lot more that you'll be learning and experiencing as you progress in your journey here in the States.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate
thank you for
you.
Having me.
Thank you.
Yeah.